All right, so we are continuing our series called Status, and this is a relationship series. And a lot of what we're talking about the last few weeks and even beyond will be things that some of you guys can apply some of this stuff right now, but some will apply later on. For some of you guys, much later, because some of y'all are freshmen or sophomores. But if you're older, it might apply sooner than you might think. And so today we're talking about the concept of engagement. Now, this will not be how to propose, although some might need some help in this area. I've seen some lame proposals in my time. And let me just give you an example of one. For example, this guy may need to rethink this. You gotta watch at least four times. At least. When God says, not him, take the hint. All right, one last time. Here we go. It just gets better each time. Oh, my goodness. I love that. I don't know what goes through someone's mind to think this is the perfect spot for me to get engaged, right here on the edge of a waterfall. Man, a sign of things to come, I think, in that relationship. I will say this for the ladies. For the ladies in the room, if the guy you are dating proposes to you during halftime of a sporting event, the answer should be no. I will not marry you. All right? Because, it's so overdone, so cliche. And ladies, let me just ask you, how many of you all would want to be proposed to at halftime of a sporting event? Raise your hand. Anyone? Sam raised his hand. I'm just saying the odds are against you on that one. So that's also when you have the greatest chance to be turned down, I think, in front of a whole crowd of people. It's not going to be a good situation for you. Now, how does a couple know if they should move past dating and into engagement? How do they know if they truly love one another? Many years ago, I had this intern she's moved away many years ago now, but she was an intern of mine with our students, and she was just really, she was dating this guy for a while, and she was really wrestling through this question, like, how do we know we love each other? And this is like over 15 years ago, and I was always having this conversation with her, and I was just trying to get to the bottom of, like, if you're having this much question and doubt, then maybe this isn't the person for you. But what I began to walk her through is what I'll tell you here in just a second. But just a spoiler alert, they didn't actually get married. They did not marry each other because she was really wrestling with this question, like, how do we know this is the person? And when I was young, I would hear people say things like, love is a choice. You choose to love someone is what they would say. But I was a little confused, and I agree with that. I'll explain this more as we go, but I was confused because there were certain girls that I was just drawn to or attracted to. It might be, superficial things that are attracting you to someone. I know that you guys have experienced that too, where you just find yourself drawn to someone for whatever reason, because attraction seems to happen to us, right? It's not always something we just choose, if that makes sense. But here's the problem we run into. In English, we only have one word for love. So we say, I love you, and we say, I love tacos. Those don't mean the same thing. And so, I think someone said, what if they do? That's not the same word for love, I don't think. If you say to your girlfriend, I love you like I love tacos, that's just not going to work. It's not very romantic to say that. Now, here's a better way to think about it. Here's some of the biblical words for love. So the word eros is where we get the idea of physical attraction from. That's a Greek word for love. It's used in the Bible, but it's physical attraction. Then there is phileo, which is friendship love. You guys know Philadelphia is known as the city of what? Brotherly, which it's not a very loving place if you've been there, by the way. But phileo, friendship love, And then there's agape, which is unconditional love. So there's other words as well. We'll focus on these three today. But many of us think that only eros, like physical attraction, is love. And it is true that like either you have this with someone or you don't. Like you don't really choose it. It's either there or it's not there. Are you physically attracted to that person? Like you don't really choose that. It's either there or it's not. Then there's friendship love. Like, do you connect at a deep friendship level? Do you have like a chemistry and there's a friendship that has started with you and this person? And so if those first two things are there, I think the first two loves that we have listed here are not really loves that you choose. They're either just there or they're not. Then the next love, agape, that love is a choice. So will you now choose to agape this person? And this is what I walked my intern through. I said, listen, do you have the first one? Do you have the second one? And she was kind of like confused about it and said, I don't really know. And I said, well, if you don't really know about the first two, then the chances are you probably shouldn't walk into agape with this person, meaning that love, I think, is a choice, choosing to love someone unconditionally, because this is the kind of love that God has for us, agape love, unconditional. And this is also why I don't think that you should say the words, I love you, in a dating relationship until you are ready to move towards engagement or marriage, which is agape love, because you might feel eros towards someone, or you may have this phileo or friendship love, but when you say those words, I love you, to someone you're dating, it implies commitment, because saying those words casually or too early, I think, leads to confusion and hurt. And you might say, you might ask the question, well, I say I love you to my friends, so why would I not say it to my boyfriend or girlfriend? And I would say, well, we know that you don't mean the same thing when you're saying it to your friend versus your boyfriend or girlfriend. So this is my caution to you. Don't use that word lightly when you use that word. Now, you might hear this and say, okay, so I have, what if you have the first two loves with this person, eros and phileo, and so now I guess I can move into the third, which is agape, which is a choice. And I would say, but should you? Because what if that person is not a believer? Then people think they have no control over who they love, but they do. Some people have this, you might call it the avalanche view of love, where if you're on a mountain and you're skiing with some people, and an avalanche just starts to come down the mountain, and it's just going to swallow you up. You can't escape it. It's just going to engulf you, right? You have no choice in that matter. Some view, I think, love that way. They think of it as like, it's just avalanche. It just takes over you. It just engulfs you, and you have no choice in the matter. And I would say, listen, you could have attraction towards someone, but if you begin to kind of feed that, spend lots of time with them, and say things to them that make it seem like you're in a relationship with that person, you're going to feed that love, and you're going to think, well, I just have to be with this person now because we're in this loving relationship. No, you have a choice in the matter. When the Bible says, do not be unequally yoked, do you think that God knows that you're going to find someone who's not a Christian attractive? You'll find someone like that, but you've got a choice in the matter to whether or not you're going to enter a relationship with them and choose to agape them with this unconditional love in that kind of a relationship. So you have a choice. So for the sake of this talk, let's assume that the person that we're talking about in your life is a devoted Christ follower. They have good character, and that physical attraction and friendship love are both present. So now what? Like, how do you know if you should move forward into agape love? Well, there's four ways to know that you know. The first is a strong sense of commitment. Another way to ask this is, do you both want to work through problems? Not asking if you're able to, but do you have a desire to do so? In the book of Song of Solomon, we read these words. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 6. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death. Jealousy is fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. So how is love like death? Like, we don't usually put that in a Valentine's card, do we? My love for you is like death. That would feel very overbearing and freaky. But love and death are alike in this way. When death takes hold of something, it never lets go. So love grabs hold and says, I'm staying for better or for worse. Now, I am not saying you should have this kind of commitment while dating someone, because part of dating is evaluating. Are they the kind of person I should be with? Am I the kind of person that they should be with? So dating isn't marriage, but dating is still somewhat of a commitment. If the other person you're with is dating multiple people at the same time, that's not a sense of commitment. This verse mentions jealousy. It says, you know, many see the idea of jealousy as negative, but there's a godly jealousy. There's a godly kind of jealousy. So this is not overreactive jealousy. So overreactive jealousy would be something like, I saw you say hi to that person, and now I'm angry about it. That's an overreactive jealousy. It's unreasonable. But there is a godly jealousy. If someone has cheated on someone, well, it's right to be jealous about that, because that would be the kind of jealousy that God has towards his people. But in the dating relationship, do you see a desire to work through problems? Ben Stewart writes, evaluate long enough to see how the relationship survives when drama comes. There are just many couples that don't evaluate long enough. They make rash decisions when they're still in the infatuation stage, and they don't evaluate long enough, and they move towards marriage sometimes too quickly. If I'm counseling with a couple, I'll ask, when have you had a conflict and how did you handle it? And if they say, we never disagree, we always agree on everything, that's a big red flag. Because that says to me, you're not really expressing your opinions into each other. You're just going along to get along. But also, I think those trials and disagreements can expose what's in someone's heart and how badly you want to be in that relationship. Song of Solomon chapter 8, verse 7 says, many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. So if love is like a fire, even a flood can't put it out. So you have to date someone long enough to have some kind of disagreements about fundamental issues. And when those things arise in a relationship, is there a desire in both people to work through it in a godly, understanding way? Now, I'll be clear about one thing. If the problems we're talking about in a relationship are resulting from a person's lack of character, then that's a bigger problem, and you should end the relationship. If someone's lack of character is creating the problems, you don't need to stay and work it out. You need to get out, because you're not married, you're just dating. It's an evaluation process. I've talked to you before in this series about my sophomore year relationship in high school, and this girl I was dating for about 10 months, it was a highly dysfunctional relationship on both of our parts, but something that she would do in our relationship is that she cheated on me several times, and she would confess these things to me, and I would be very upset, very livid, and I told you last week how the physical aspect of the relationship was what was keeping me there, because it's like a drug. That's the only thing that was keeping me in that relationship and making me want to continue it. And so at the end of that school year, I was on a mission trip overseas, and I come back, and I think that we're still dating. And she tells me, she says, hey, just so you know, it's not been good while you've been away. I've been with someone for the last 2 weeks while you've been gone. And I was just, she told me this like in the middle of a mall food court that was packed full of people. It was a very interesting scene, and I was just so angry and so livid at what she just told me. But this is where the manipulation came into play. We now were having this long conversation in this mall, and it's a very heated conversation. And she says to me, but Dave, you know, what I realized through all of that is that I really want to be with you. And I just thought, no, I'm not playing this game anymore. And so that was the end of our relationship. But it's highly manipulative, highly dysfunctional. And she would say things like, but you've always said we need to work through our problems. But no, listen, when the problems stem from a lack of character, then we don't work out those problems. We get out of the relationship. We get out of that relationship. Something else to think about is that distance can also be a test for this commitment that I'm talking about. Now, sometimes people will finish high school and they're in a relationship and they will decide based on the relationship to go to the same college. I don't recommend that you do that. Now, you might end up at the same college as the person that you're with. That might happen for other reasons. But I've known couples who have decided, you know what, we think we're going to probably stay together, but I'm going this direction in my career. They're going over here for a little bit. And sometimes the distance can be a good test for how committed are you both to this relationship. If the distance makes you go, you know what, I'm not really feeling it anymore, well, it might be that that wasn't meant to be. It might be that wasn't really the person for you and vice versa. I've known many couples that have allowed the distance to test the relationship, and they've come through, and they've finished college or whatever else, and they find a way to make that long-distance thing work. Because long distance, as you know, is very difficult. So are you willing to go through that difficulty? And that could be a good test for the commitment level that you both might have towards a relationship. I've also seen it where students decide to go to the same college because they're dating, and then guess what happens freshman year? They break up. Now what? Are you going to switch schools? So that could be an awkward situation. The next way to know that you know is a growing skill of communication. Now, can you navigate relational conflict? Can you disagree in a way that promotes unity rather than disunity? Proverbs 12:18 says, "There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. So when you disagree with someone, do words become weapons like swords? Do you wound them to win the argument?" You can be crazy about someone, but if you cannot communicate when life gets difficult, you're not going to make it. If a couple told me all we do is fight, that's also a red flag. It's a red flag if you never disagree. It's a red flag if all you do is disagree. But it's also a red flag if you never do. And how you resolve those disagreements is the key. Or sometimes one person is real dominant, and they just kind of always get their way. And so the reason why they never have conflict is because there's a dominant and a passive person, and the dominant person always wins. That's not a good situation either. Proverbs 15:4 says, "A gentle tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit." So what do you do when your feelings are hurt? Like, how do you respond? Do you lash out? Do you give the silent treatment? Do you stonewall that person? We've got to speak in a way that gives life to one another, producing growth and intimacy in that relationship. Ben Stewart writes, "When you disagree with someone, you need to focus on his or her actions and your feelings. Do not try to guess the other person's motives." I have found this statement so helpful in my own marriage. And here's why. Because at times whenever someone hurts us, we like to focus on their motives instead of their actions. So we tell them what their motive was. We say, "Hey, when you did this, you meant this," fill in the blank. We read motive into it, and now the person's getting defensive, saying like, "I didn't mean that when I said that. I wasn't trying to say that when I said that one statement." And now they get defensive, and they say, no, yes, you did. They say, "No, I didn't." And now we're off to the races. Early on in our relationship, my wife and I, Courtney, we did this to each other, where we would assign motive to the other one. And it was never a good situation because we would both get defensive, and that now becomes the argument versus the initial thing that we're talking about. So it's important that you understand that whenever you go to someone that may have hurt you or offended you, you say, "Hey, here's what you did. like describe their concrete action, whatever it was, and here's how I felt about it. And you just start with that. And then let them respond. Because you're not reading motive now into what they did. You're simply saying, here's what you did, here's what you said, and here's how that made me feel. And you start there. And that's usually a much better conversation than trying to assign blame or motive. Now, the next point, the way that you know, is whether or not you can survive a moment of confession. Now, this should not be a conversation that is early on in the relationship. This is why I say a lot of this series is going to apply to you guys much later in your life. I'm talking about like when you are in a serious dating relationship and you could see this thing moving towards marriage, like you're at that level, then there might be some things that come out in your conversations where you confess some things to that person or they confess some things to you. And this might be telling them about sins of your past or maybe sins that have been committed against you. And I do not recommend having this kind of conversation on a first date, no matter how old you are. But I don't recommend having a conversation about delicate topics like sexual brokenness or abuse without first seeking wisdom through a mentor, a pastor, a counselor, a leader, because that person that you trust can help you know how much detail you need to share. Because you don't need to always share all the details. Okay, the goal is to share enough for it to be a legitimate confession, but leave out unnecessary graphic detail. And you might ask the question, well, how is my past any of this person's business? Well, first it says to the other person that I trust you, even in my brokenness. And second, it can be powerfully healing. Proverbs 28:13 says, whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy. If the other person understands the mercy of God, then they will show you mercy when you confess. And they might respond with words like, I'm so sorry that happened to you, or I forgive you. I still want to be with you. And those are healing words that someone can speak to you. Honest conversation about your past can strengthen the bond between you. And the chances are that when one of you opens up and confesses, the other will as well. Again, for Courtney and I, we dated for a few months, we broke up for 4 months, and we got back together again. And the second round of us dating, and being, we knew at that point it was getting serious. If you can survive a breakup, you're kind of probably heading towards marriage, right? And so we're now in round two, and there was a night where she confessed some things to me about her past and when she wasn't walking with Jesus. And then I was able to confess some things about my own past, my own sin struggles. And if you're on the receiving end of that conversation, it might be difficult for you. But remember, for any follower of Christ, sin is not that person's identity. Jesus is. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, Paul lists off many sins like sexual immorality and idolatry and greed and stealing, being drunk with wine. And he says in verse 11, and I love this statement, and such were some of you. But you were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and by the Spirit of our God. And I love that because Paul lists off all these different sin struggles that we have, and he says, and such were some of you, but that's no longer who you are. So when you are with someone, you need to answer this question. Do I believe this about them? Do I believe it about myself? And that I can confess some things I have struggled with, or maybe even current struggles, and without feeling shame and condemnation, that I understand my identity is in Christ and not in my sin. Because marriage has this powerful It is a powerful picture of the gospel. And marriage teaches us the gospel. So can you see this person as Jesus sees them? Another way to know that you know is having the support of your community. You need wise people around you speaking into your life always, but especially in areas of relationships. I'm always amazed at how many young people, and they're moving towards marriage, and they're getting the wedding list, the invitation list ready, and they're going to invite people to a ceremony. But I say, invite people into your life. Invite people into your life first so they can speak into this kind of relationship with you. Proverbs 11:14 says, where there is no guidance, a people falls, but in an abundance of counselors, there is safety. So you don't need advice from everyone. I would advise against that. There's too many people to choose from on how you even deal with that. But a few wise people who you trust, you need these conversations, I think, well before engagement happens, through the whole process. You're giving them permission to point out problem areas or lack of health in the relationship, and you should be seeking their counsel along the way. And again, not just people that tell you what you want to hear. I would recommend finding people who are not your close friends, but people that can speak into your relationship that don't have a vested interest in, like, maintaining a friendship with you necessarily. If the people that are around you are saying this isn't healthy, then I would say, what are you doing? This is why I recommend pre-engagement counseling, not just premarital counseling, because we all know once the ring is on the finger, most people are not open to hearing a different viewpoint. They're just not. Ben Stewart writes, the voices of the wise around you who can agree with you that this relationship is a good thing, when the chorus of the wise sound their approval, you can cross that threshold into marriage with confidence. So let's go back to the idea of these three loves, eros, phileo, and agape, because I've heard some use the analogy of a flame when they describe these kinds of love. And think of each one like an individual flame. So eros certainly feels like that when you first meet someone. There is this rush of excitement and attraction. A flame has been lit, and you want to sing and dance. You start writing poetry. The sun seems brighter. Food tastes better. I mean, it's amazing when that first happens to you in your life, and all seems right with the world. Now, at this point, many start going down the physical road. They think, I'm attracted to this person, so we'll start doing stuff. But this is like pouring gasoline on that flame, and now it's a fire out of control. It feels exciting, but there's no real depth to it, to this kind of love. And if all you have is physical attraction, you might ask one day, do I even like this person? Are we even friends at all? So once the gasoline burns off, the flame just dies out. There's no substance to that relationship. So you can think of it like, what if you think of the three loves we described as kind of like three flames? And I think it's why you also need the flames of phileo, which is friendship love, and agape, which is unconditional love, because those two loves, phileo and agape, will keep the marriage alive and keep commitment secure. And I really believe, if I was going to demonstrate this, I don't want to catch the opac on fire today, so I decided to go with a slide versus a demonstration. But if you were to take three torches like this that are all burning separately, and you put them all together as one, what happens? The flame grows exponentially. It's going to be taller. It's going to have more heat. It's going to be much bigger than just the sum of those three flames individually. So when you put those three loves together, they're burning as one. That's when they burn brightest. And if one of the loves begins to wane, they can be reignited by the other two. And that's how you should think about what it means to truly love someone. It's not just, am I attracted? It's, is there a friendship based on Christ, but also, are you choosing to agape that person, to love them unconditionally in the way that Jesus loves us? You guys are going to head to your breakouts now, so you guys, I think, should know where to go. Leaders, discussion seats are at the very back. If you're new and don't know where to go, then come and see me, and I can direct you to where you're supposed to go.